Podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
And unfortunately, we're not doing an episode on the Dog Stars, a mega hit, which has made so much money. It's gotten such good reviews, but Shelby said no, we couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So I know that you guys are
hustlers
all
over again.
As people have really seen and loved it, please write in to Shelby complaining that we didn't do an episode on the Dog Stars.
Yeah. I was going to. I bought a ticket and everything, and then I was just like, ugh. Oh. It just doesn't sound fun.
But you read the book.
It's boring. Yeah. A long time ago.
Okay. And you didn't like it? You didn't like the book?
2012 version of me did not like the book, and I don't fully identify with her anymore, so I can't speak fully to that, to the experience of reading that book at BYU and in between religion courses and, you know, clutching my pearls at the amount of swears and
Why you didn't like it? Because there were too much swearing?
I mean, I don't remember. I'm sure that was part of it.
Okay.
Was Jacob Elordi mouthy in this? I don't know.
Well, so I just, not to derail us instantly, but I was watching this and there's two scenes. So the basic premise of the Dog Stars, for those who did not see it, which is everybody since this made no money and got terrible reviews, is that it's based on a book. There's Jacob Elordi's character. It's like post-apocalyptic. He's living in Colorado and sort of like it's after the apocalypse. So he and Josh Brolin are like hanging out in this old like airport, I guess, like small airport hangar. Like they've set up as like a home base. And he like wants to go out sort of and keep exploring the world and see if they can find other people. And Josh Brolin's like, no, we got to like lock it down. Like we have a good thing going on here. We can't have other people. If other people show up on the premise, we have to just shoot them. And Jacob Lurie's like, no, maybe not. But then there's two scenes in the movie in which Jacob Lurie, Josh Brolin, both white. Also then the other two characters who they encounter, played by Margaret Qualley and Guy Pearce, also white people. They encounter two like roving groups of like I want to use the word savages. Like they're
strike the record.
They are crazy groups of people. One of them is like mostly like Mexican coded, the other is like Native American coded, and they're both just presented as like these horrible, like killer, terrible, like ripping things apart, like have like they're, it's not like they're there to find like medicine or food at the camp, they're just like there to destroy things, like and I was watching it and I was like, this is fully racist. I was like, this is so problematic. Like, I can't even handle how problematic this is. And then I was like, was this based on the book? And then I went back and like looked at the Wikipedia summary of the book, and neither of these scenes take place in the book. So like Ridley Scott wrote these crazy scenes for the movie, I think to probably add some like action to it, since you know, they're the two kind of like fight scenes in the movie. But I was like, this is bad, 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 bad vibes. Luckily, no one saw the movie, so I don't think you can get canceled on a movie if no one saw it. But should anybody at any point decide to see the Dog Stars, like highly problematic.
Yeah.
But maybe you would have liked those scenes in 2012. You'd been like, yeah, this makes sense.
Don't put that on me. She was just a baby. She didn't know.
There is also a plot line where there's like a group of Mennonites who like live somewhere else, but they have some sort of like genetic disorder, which is confusing if they're trying to hint like that it's like an inbred kind of thing or what the vibe is, but they have a genetic disorder and Josh Brolin keeps thinking that they're Mormons and not Mennonites.
Oh, so cute.
There's also that for you.
Cute. Representation matters. I love that. Actually, what was the final straw for me not seeing the Dog Stars was Margaret Qualley's the like Emperor's New Clothes situation happening with her quote unquote shoeless heels. I wanted to that is a step too far for the elite. I just will not allow rich people to traipse around barefoot and call it high fashion. I just won't. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I understand a lot of footwear is not functional, you know, like all high heels. Like there's a lot of non-functional footwear out there in the world and a lot of it is worn on red carpet. So like far be it from me to be like, well, this is the one that's a step too far. But it was weird to have like a piece of fabric sort of tied on the back of her foot. And then
made me so mad.
Yeah. And then like the front half of her foot sort of like hanging off just like on the step and repeat. That was honestly the grossest thing to me was like, okay, the step and repeat is kind of nasty. And also where these red carpets are, it's like, how is she getting from her car to the carpet? Like it's usually through some weird back alley of a movie theater or something like that hasn't been cleaned in years. Like,
yeah. It's a no for
gross
me.
Gross energy.
I hated it, and it was the final straw for that movie and Margaret Qualley and fashion at large.
Margaret Qualley is very like an industry plant to me. Like I've yet to see her in something where I've thought, oh wow, like this is a talent.
I thought you were obsessed with her dumb Demi Moore movie.
No.
I thought you liked
it. I did not like The Substance that much. I feel like you liked it more than I did.
What?
I did not
Matthew,
like The Substance.
Is this a body swap situation? Because
no.
I was
did you
never
hate The Substance?
On record saying it. Yeah, I hated
Well, then I guess
the
then we both didn't like The Substance, because I also didn't like The Substance. I don't think we ever did an episode on The Substance, but was not
I
my
feel
favorite.
Like... I feel like you made me or something, but maybe not. Maybe I'm just remembering ranting...
I mean, maybe I told you that you should watch it because it was like a very big movie that year, but I don't think I was ever like, oh my gosh,
like,
you know, my
no,
favorite
you
movie
love
is.
Demi Moore. You loved her in it.
Oh,
I swear
I
to God.
I didn't want her to win the Oscar. Like, you're mixing me up with somebody else, probably gay, probably homophobia is what's going on here. And not all gay people are the same. You can't just lump us all in together. Like the scriptwriter of the Dog Stars.
You're right.
I'm not just ransacking your house going, Demi Moore. But anyways, we are not here to talk about the Dog Stars or Demi Moore or Margaret Qualley, as far as I am aware. We're here to talk about Coyote versus Acme.
Yes.
A children's movie, question mark? I sort of wasn't really thinking it was a kid's movie, but then I just saw it. Yes. But like all of the trailers before it were for animated movies. So I said, oh, I guess this must be like a movie that kids are going to. Did you bring Penny or did you see it? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a PG movie. It's like a live action, you know, animation mix. It's a Looney Tunes.
Right.
A la, you know, Space Jam. So I would classify it as a kid's flick.
Okay.
As a family friendly affair.
It's also sort of a legal drama.
Yes. And it went through the ringer to make it to us today. And for that I applaud what is it?
Ketchup Entertainment.
Ketchup Entertainment. Yeah. So the story, as I heard told in the last 2 months since this trailer dropped, is that this movie has been in the works for, you know, the better part of the 2010s. But ultimately, the final version of it, scripted by May December, auteur Sammy Birch, and directed by David Green, starring Will Forte and... the Looney Tunes, Wile E.
Coyote.
Yeah. And so they finished it. They had it. It was done. It was fully produced. The music was done. The animation was done. And Warner Brothers was like, you know what? I don't believe in this. I'd rather just scrap this for a tax write-off. This was in 2023, right around their first merger. And Barbie was taking all their attention. And so they just buried it. They were going to axe it, even though there was really good initial press screenings and everyone was excited about it. But they decided to save like $20 million by using it as a tax write-off, eat the rich. And then there was just this growing fervor around it, especially as the cast started to be more vocal about like, wait, this was like actually good. And it literally is done. It's all paid for. Every dime has been spent on it already. So you might as well release it. And they did like a funeral screening, which is for everyone who worked on it to finally get to see it. And at first Warner Brothers didn't want to do the screening, but then they went through with it. And then that made even more people mad because they're like, no, this is like an excellent film and we want it to have its chance. And so then last year or 2025, Warner Brothers is like, fine, we'll consider selling it to another distributor. And that's when Ketchup stepped in, and all praise Ketchup for saving the day and rescuing the little $70 million movie that could.
All praise Ketchup Entertainment, which I had never heard of before.
Yeah.
It's, according to their Wikipedia page, it's an independent film production and distribution company. However, the movies that are listed as like their best known movies are things I have never heard of. So
yeah, no, they saw their opportunity. This is a David versus Goliath, and they stood up and they're like, this will save us. And maybe it will.
And maybe it will. Cause how much does it, they acquired the rights for approximately $50 million. Okay. And so far it has grossed $15 million. So they've got a lot of ways to go on that.
But good feels. It's only made 15.
Yes, according to Wikipedia, that is all that it has made.
I don't trust Wikipedia. When was it last updated?
Okay, well, let me go to Google Box Office Mojo
Thank you.
See what is going on with that.
Thank you.
The problem is that it is going up against, one, like people on vacation. but then two, like Spider-Man and The Odyssey, which are just like continuing to make crazy amounts of money. Yeah, it's made $15,468,000.
So I'm going to speak to this. This is called a tangent. Okay.
Okay. Yes.
The
floor is yours.
I'm sick of parents taking their kids to see shit like Minions. Like, please just let your kids learn to ask questions like, was that a bad guy about a lawyer? Instead of just like sitting in front of a screen and watching Paw Patrol like fight dinosaurs. I don't know. Like, I want movies like this more than I want to sit through a single showing of Minions, okay? And that's my soapbox, because we did, in fact, take Penny to this and then Paw Patrol. And listen, I get it. Paw Patrol is a more exciting feast for the eyes for little baby brains. But, I mean, I just don't think it has anything beyond the shiny cotton candy filter, and Coyote versus Acme teaches real life important values. There's a themes tab on their Wikipedia page, and there's not one of those for Minions, I'll tell you that much.
Well, yeah, except for Minions was supposedly an homage to old Hollywood. Remember that? I also saw Minions.
I also heard Minions is very sex positive because there was a woman complaining about the butt plug scene in it.
Oh.
Which is not, it seems a stretch to me.
People complain about anything.
Yeah.
I do think that, like, Penny is lucky in that you guys go see a lot of movies. So you take her to a lot of movies. So she gets to see, like, you know, the good kids movies, the bad kid movies, whatever. It's like she's sort of seeing everything that's coming out that's available to her for kids, which is fun. And also, you know, helps their mind develop taste and whatnot, because they're seeing a lot of different things. I feel like a lot of parents, like, don't want to go to the movies. And so, therefore, like, they're only going to see something if their kid, like, really drags them there. And then you're only going, like, once a quarter, once every 6 months. So you're seeing less. Question, though. How does, like, paying for Penny work? Does she have an A? Does she have a Stubbs A-list?
Have we signed her up?
Is she?
No,
is
they
she
did open it up
kid?
To children.
How does that work?
No, most theaters, I think it's like age 3 and under, you can get them in for free.
Okay.
But once they're having their own seat, you're paying for that shit. You know.
Okay.
AMC does now offer it to children. Like, it used to be only 18 and above, uh-huh. so you need like an ID. But we haven't signed her up for it now, so we just pay for her.
And is there a kids rate for a ticket, or is it the same price as an adult?
Yeah, yeah. There's a, I mean, it's just like when we were children, Matt. Don't you remember? There's
well, when
kids,
I was a
adults,
kid, I wasn't seniors. Paying for my own ticket. My parents.
Oh,
were, so
okay. Bougie, bougie. Clock it. Didn't have to make stretch your allowance money, did you?
No. No.
Put it on the credit card, Daddy. Like, we're ready to go.
I saw the little kids begging outside of the theater for quarters so they could go to movies with their parents.
Yes.
And I said, I'm not like
and
those
like,
people.
What is that? How much mm-hmm. can a movie cost? You know? No, there's a slightly cheaper. I think it's like $13 instead of $18. You know what I mean?
There, my parents were only going to matinees, though. Like, we,
oh, yeah.
if we were seeing a movie, it was the, like, 9:30 a.m. Saturday morning screening.
I think that's
like,
most kids still today.
Yeah.
Because like, we went to a 9 a.m. screening. Yeah.
Yeah. The Saturday morning matinees were, like, our family time
yeah,
slot
exactly.
to be going to movies. That's when yeah. we were. That's when we were hitting it up. Yeah. Okay, so, and Penny liked Coyote versus Acme?
Yeah. I would say she liked it. She wasn't miserable. She's only okay. asked to walk out of one movie, and it was Garfield, and Garfield was bad, so we okay. supported that. But otherwise, she'll pretty easily lock in. And I think it did take a little bit more explaining, one, because, you know, Wile E. Coyote doesn't actually talk and
right.
sometimes uses signs, and Penny can't quite keep up with the reading required to like
yes.
catch those zingers. Mm-hmm. But she got the gist. She knew John Cena was a bad guy. The rooster was a bad guy. She had questions about the creepy doctor.
Yes.
Because he read like a bad guy, like
right.
visually, you know, I don't want to typecast cartoon illustrations, but,
right.
but it felt like every time
creepy
he was
face.
On screen,
yes.
I was like, ugh, get him out of here.
Mm-hmm.
But we explained that no, he was good.
Sometimes good people can be ugly too.
Yeah, exactly. Another
important lesson to learn.
So yeah, I think it was good. I mean, Looney Tunes is popular because it just involves cartoons getting smashed by different things.
Right.
And that sort of humor translates across generations. So she
yeah.
was game for that.
I was wondering as well, like, how popular are the Looney Tunes with children? Because I feel like
I don't
they played a lot like on cable when I was a kid.
Oh yeah.
Or they would play like in between things, you know what I mean? Like it would like in between episodes of something on Cartoon Network, you know, they would play like a 5-minute Looney Tune or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I feel like I saw like ingested a lot of them.
Oh yeah.
But I don't know, yeah, like are they on YouTube? Like where would you even watch one if you were a child?
I don't know. Yeah, in my adulthood I haven't like encountered the Looney Tunes except at Six Flags. Where they are the characters you can meet.
Yeah.
So
like did Penny know
Penny
the Roadrunner
no.
or Wile E. Coyote? Okay.
No.
Did she know Bugs Bunny?
No.
Okay.
We'd like explained some of them. We were like,
yeah.
oh, this guy likes to chase this bird. It's all he wants to do is catch the bird.
Right.
The bird's really fast.
Mm-hmm.
We prepared her, you know.
Okay.
We educated her to face the world and its many questions. But yeah, I don't know. Like I don't know the footprint Looney Tunes currently has. I do feel like the audience skewed more adult. There weren't that many children compared to something like, I mean, Minions or like a Shrek screening.
Mm-hmm.
And all the millennials were having a great time. I do think to talk about this film specifically, I love the aura points it gets for being rescued from Warner Brothers. May they
yes.
live in hell forever. I do think the first half was stronger than the second half.
Yeah, I had heard a lot of like very positive things about this movie. I mean, one, because of the whole, you know, legal battle, whatever, you know, there had been whispers of people who'd seen it or knew someone who'd seen it and said it was good, what blah, 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 blah. And then I think it played at Comic-Con like a month ago or so. And so I saw people online and people who I knew who were covering Comic-Con being like, oh my gosh, like Coyote versus Acme, like so funny. And I think the premise is really clever because it's basically a legal drama in which, because the coyote is, you know, constantly trying to catch the Roadrunner in the cartoons, and a lot of times he's using devices that, you know, are quote unquote made by Acme, and then those devices malfunction in various ways. This is like a John Grisham-esque
Aaron lawsuit. Brockovich, yeah.
Yes, Aaron Brockovich, of like, oh, this evil corporation is making these faulty devices, which are then causing like injury and harm to Wile E. Coyote and the other cartoons that are using Acme. Mm-hmm. So we need to hire Will Forte, who is like a sort of skeezy lawyer, to defend them in this class action lawsuit.
Yeah, a personal injury lawyer. Yeah.
Which I think is like a funny premise on the surface and like very clever. And that's probably like, this is based off of a New Yorker article from 1990 about this. So it's like this concept has been like in the ether for a long time, even before it became a script. But I found the movie itself to be like less funny than I wanted it to be.
Like, oh, really?
I felt like it leaned too hard on the legal stuff and the sort of like twists and things in the like case, which I wasn't really that interested by, and which I found more and more confusing as it went along. And I wanted more of like the goofy sort of stuff. And I do think that, yeah, like the first half where it's setting up the things is really fun. And then when you get into the second half and you're like, okay, so they were using the products to test on the cartoon so that they could put them. There are parts that are funny, but it is confusing. And I can see how it would be confusing for kids, because it was confusing for me.
Well, as your brain, you know. No, I think, yeah, I think this movie, I mean, I ultimately found it like a very engaging socially, you know, I feel like the laughs per minute were pretty solid for a kids movie, for a family movie. Once the DC stuff like happened, it slowed down. Yeah. Once you like learn, once Will Forte is standing in front of some sort of Senate hearing, it really slows down the momentum. Well, but the payoff for some of those jokes outlaid really saved it in the end too. So I think I think it was a really good, sturdy movie. I'm not trying to like change midpoint. Mm-hmm. But I did enjoy.
You're pivoting
this movie.
Now to.
I enjoyed this movie a lot.
I had a fun time watching it. I, however, do not like. I think it was a very like slightly above average movie. I did not think it was like a masterpiece or like crazy funny. Like I was thinking about The Naked Gun a lot watching this, and how The Naked Gun is also, you know, a legal, you know, crime, whatever. But it like. The case itself isn't like they're never really focused on that. It's like what the you know, who's the bad guy, what they did, whatever, like doesn't really matter. It's more of like these gags in these different like courtroom and law settings. Where with this, it was like, well, who are they going to call to the stand? Oh, well, can they get this person to come? There was a lot of like.
It wasn't really
stuff.
That. They were trying to catch the Roadrunner and they couldn't. So they actually didn't have any witnesses.
Right. But like we've got to give a subpoena to the Roadrunner so that the Roadrunner will come. Oh, like there were funny parts, but it just was a, too much not funny in between the funny. And then the not funny stuff didn't really like make sense at all from like elite. I mean, not that
because
I want to.
Because it's Looney Tunes.
Right, because it's Looney Tunes.
Yeah, it's
but Looney. I was kind of like, okay, if we're going to try to like make this like a, like if you're going to make a real case here, then you might as well make it a real case. Like, don't have all these details for a real case and then have them, like, it also sort of not make sense. Like it's a Senate legal...
The legal system, Matt, is broken.
Okay. Well, yes,
and
yes.
That's a theme they're calling out. Like, that's their message.
Okay, yes.
Is that the powers that be will constantly win, but we have to take the little victories we get.
No, so I did love the anti-corporate... angle and the fact that it's that Acme's basically like Apple sort of like the Acme logo's on the back of everyone's phone, and I was like, maybe that's why this movie didn't get made
exactly
time, because some of these companies were like, this is getting a little too close to home.
I don't like this.
And unlike Barbie, which, you know, does a last minute shift to be like, actually the corporations were the good guys all along,
I don't think Barbie ever did that. Which is, you always bring that up as like, actually, no, we're not doing the Barbie thread again. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But I did enjoy this like through line of Sisyphus. Like, it's, you know,
Sisyphus.
One must imagine Sisyphus happy. And it's like, that's Wile E. Coyote, you know, he's constantly chasing this roadrunner and he's never, ever going to catch it.
Right.
And so having that like final twist in the courtroom be like, roadrunner showing up and being like, when are you coming home?
But why? Why? Because he likes being chased?
Yes!
He's like a sadist or whatever. He's like, yeah.
No,
like,
he's enjoying it. It's but like, that's life.
The coyote is trying to eat him. It's not like the coyote,
I know, but
is
then
like,
they realize it's like, well, it's about the journey, you know? It's right. Not actually about eating Roadrunner stew. It's about eating stew with your friends, you know?
Okay.
You're telling me Roadrunner shows up, meet, and you didn't feel
confused.
A dang thing. When the court reporter's like, A-R-E, are you coming back? Oh my God, Matt, right in the chest. I was like, I feel alive again.
I thought this poor bird doesn't realize, like, he thinks that this is a game, but it's
the
not.
The bird's always been smarter.
The
it's like Tom and Jerry. It's like,
it's
like there's something, there's play. It becomes a thing that circles back to love, you know? It's like.
No, it's bad. It's bad in either direction, because either the Roadrunner doesn't know that the coyote's trying to eat him and thinks that this is all fun and games, and at some point the coyote will kill him, or B, the Roadrunner does know that the coyote is trying to eat him and just wants to watch the coyote in misery.
But that's the point of the like reveal, is Wile E. Coyote realizes, well, no, his real joy is the chase. And so they do get to just like play around
conversation
now.
With
because he can't talk. He's looking with his little eyes
and they
warm up. And then they basically do. Doesn't he literally say, I'm glad you're back, on a sign or something?
I don't know. Sure. I wasn't keeping meticulous
but
details
it's
of
like,
the signs.
But that's the whole, that I'm shocked. I'm shocked that I'm taking this like humanist, optimist, joy over misery stance in our podcast. You know, right now I'm not used to it. I don't know how to adjust, but I felt like,
well, now you know how I feel.
I felt pleased with this movie's gentle reassurance that by these little steps and these little moments of realization, you can turn your attention away from the pebble in your shoe and focus on the rock in the road. You know, like, it wasn't about Roadrunner always getting away. It was about Acme setting him up to fail. And in that process of trying to take down Acme, he also learned, well, actually, I have a friend here. And it's not loneliness. You know, we have each other in this journey. in this madcap journey in the desert. Okay.
I wanted it to be more of like a team coming together of like, wow, like they screwed all of us over. Like we've all been right. going through this. And you kind of get that moment at the end where they're all yeah. like, okay, we all have to file these lawsuits. But I wanted like the scene that I wanted in the courtroom is like the doors bust open.
You and wanted all Mr. Smith goes to Washington.
And they're yeah. like, they're like, we've actually all been, you know. Yeah,
we all talk back.
Yeah, it's like Huckleberry Hound and, you know, whoever else are all in there. And they're like.
I did expect that, yeah.
Yeah, and we didn't get it. So
we didn't get that. But it did feel like, but it was almost like the system is so broken that you can't trust it. So instead, the real victory is Wile E. Coyote's anarchist plan to capture the villains, you know? And so he does his little trap he'd been building the whole movie and he gets them, and that's a feel good moment. It's like how to build a pipe bomb, or yeah, how to build how to blow up a pipeline. That's what was happening. It's like sometimes you have to go outside the system.
Made more sense than this did. Can we talk about the live action people in this again?
Oh, okay.
I guess. Well, because I'm like, because this was filmed so long ago. But so we have Will Forte as sort of like the lead lawyer, and then Lana Condor is the intern assistant, yeah. like moral compass of the mm-hmm. agency. And then also at the law firm is the drug dealer from Euphoria.
I just do not like her. I'm sorry to that woman, but every time she pops up in a movie, I'm like, I don't understand why this shtick has made you famous.
I thought it worked well in this setting. I thought she was well utilized here.
Just copy paste her whole thing. It's like, oh, I'm so dry and I'm so monotone. And it's not that talent. She has
a voice and that you don't like
her. It is intentional. You are joking. Hateful. That's her whole Hateful. Shtick. Anyways, yeah. And then there were.
And then yeah. there's John Cena, different of course.
Cameos.
And
did you not like them? You weren't a fan?
I thought they were fine.
I feel like Will Forte did a great job of really... And John Cena, honestly. They both felt so natural in this Looney Tune world, like acting against these cartoons. And I really appreciated that.
You know what I just realized, which I hadn't thought of before, but now I think I understand why I did not like this movie as much as you did. I think that there's a better version of this movie, and it is called the 3 Sonic the Hedgehog films, which
I adore
and love so much, which are also live action sort of animated hybrids. And I think that the people are funnier in those movies.
But like, here the people are the straight men, you know. It's
right. Like, yes.
They're lawyers.
Right. But I like in Sonic, how they're like, everybody's sort of a funny character.
Right. Yeah. But then that wouldn't work as a legal drama.
Right. Which is why I'm saying maybe the legal drama needed to be less serious.
But that's the charm of it. It's Coyote versus Acme. It's literally Aaron Brockovich for kids.
Sure. Sure. It
was fun. Will Forte, I thought, was good. Always on the cusp of being famous, you know. I mean, obviously he's famous. Always on the cusp of being top tier, I feel like. He was good in this.
Wait, I'm looking at this now. One person voiced Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Elmer Fudd, Foghorn Leghorn, Porky Pig, like what, Tweety. One person does like all of the Looney Tunes. Yeah. I did not realize that.
That's like how it works.
I thought there were different people who were doing some of them. Like, I obviously knew there was overlap, but I didn't realize like one guy was doing like half of the characters.
Joy of voice acting. That's how it works in My Little Pony too. So I guess I'm just like used to the animation world, you know, like you just like pick up on that. I don't know. I feel like that's true with the
are you like going Prince. To a lot of like My Little Pony conventions or something? Like, how do you know who the actors are?
Because there's an animated series that Penny's obsessed with, Friendship is Magic. My Little Pony. It's actually really good. It's very cute.
Okay.
But almost all the ponies are voiced by the same woman, and she just does different voices.
Oh, interesting.
Which is cute. Yeah, no, I think it's interesting to think about how this movie would have performed had it just come out. I think it was intentional, was originally going to be a streaming movie, and then they axed the whole thing. And then obviously the axe scene itself added to the story behind this. So I do wonder how this movie would have performed if it had just come out.
I mean, it seems like worse probably, right?
Yeah. I mean, but yeah, yeah. I mean,
because I don't think that if this came out in 2023 that, like, the world would have, I mean, one, less people were going to the movies then because it was, like, directly after COVID. I mean, I think that this is, like, a really good summer for the movies. And even stuff that's not, you know, things like Obsession have done really well. So there's definitely people who are, like, excited to go see things. And the fact that this was, like, canceled and then the word of mouth brought it back, like, I think only helps it. I honestly think, though, that it, like, the marketing is a little confusing because I thought that this was more of, like, a movie geared towards adults. like not, like, or, like, families, but, like, I would not, like, I wouldn't think, like, oh, the Moana audience is the audience for Coyote versus Acme. But mm-hmm. but if it is PG and that is the audience that they're going for, then it feels like they should have done a better job marketing that, because that's a lot of money. If you can get parents to take your kids to see this, like, even bad kids movies make a lot of money because, you know, like, there's only so many kids movies, and if you're taking four kids to see something, like, that's a nice chunk of change.
But so how would they have done it different? Like, what would they have highlighted?
I don't know. I guess I'm not really sure. Like, maybe more toys in, like, the supermarket or something. I don't know.
You're right. There wasn't the crossover of, like, banana stickers, you know?
Because yeah. I think that is, like, in some weird yeah. way how you market to, like, kids, because you need the kids, like, to be in settings that they're going to be in, like the grocery store and Walmart or whatever, and, like, see Wile E. Coyote toys and be like, yeah. oh, I want to go see that movie.
I do feel like it's, like, you know, we can't just limit animated to either extremely child or extremely adult. And maybe this is sort of a bridge into a new age, because it is, like, it clearly is more geared towards the parents in a way, the Looney Tunes OG crowd, the nostalgia factor and just the silliness of getting that type of movie again. I guess, yeah, I'd be curious to talk to marketing about this, because how did they pitch and then promote? But
well, it's fascinating because, so this weekend, they were doing a screening of Harriet the Spy, which is one of my favorite movies, mm-hmm. at Nighthawk, a theater in New York. And because it was, like, a retrospective, one of the programmers got up and, you know, was talking about, like, why they picked it and blah, 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 blah. And one of the things he said was, like, oh, they don't really make movies for this age group anymore that come out in theaters. And so a lot of, like, Brooklyn, you know, parents had brought their kids to see this, and they had never seen this movie before, mm-hmm. but, you know, it was, like, in that demographic. And it's like, oh, it's a movie that's sort of about, like, more serious subject matter. It has, like, it's live action. It's not a cartoon, but at the same time, it's not, like, a Marvel movie or something you would need to be an adult for. It's, like, the perfect movie for, like, an 11-year-old to go see. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we don't really have that currently. And I think, like, this is a movie that would appeal to, like, that age range, but it's, like, yeah, for whatever reason, it feels like the marketing apparatus of that is gone. I don't know. Maybe it's, like, that was a Nickelodeon movie. Are like, less people watching, like, Nickelodeon or Disney Channel or whatever? Where, because right. I feel like back when we were kids, like, those were such monoliths that it's like, if you put advertisements for Agent Cody Banks on mm-hmm. Nickelodeon, like, everybody who was 11, 12, 13 was, like, going to go see that movie.
Yeah.
Where maybe that's not, like, an easily accessible demographic anymore, because they're not all watching, like, the same two cable channels.
Yeah. No, that's true. I don't, yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine how better to get kids.
Because, like, what are 11-year-olds watching? Like, are they just
on Snapchat and TikTok?
They're on tablets and stuff, yeah. They have phones?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. The apps.
Well, they're on YouTube. Hinge.
Yeah. Ugh.
Bumble.
That's a sex crime. That's not true.
Is it a sex crime if you're both 12?
I don't think you're allowed to be. So ergo, if one is, there's no verifying that another one is, and therefore you're gonna end up on How to Trap a Predator.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, well, and the movie version of that's coming out here at the end of the month. So,
Laura Pattinson can be showed up at your door. All the 11-year-olds in the seats.
Right.
A better marketing campaign. Mm-hmm. I think it's always going to be strange, like this, you know, millennial-fed world where we all have these things we're nostalgic for, and yet can't quite, you know, they've lost their audience, like Looney Tunes. And then on top of it, it's like, the but IP.
Looney Tunes really isn't a millennial thing. I think Looney Tunes are like a Gen X thing.
Okay.
Which I think is
millennial. Yeah.
Which I'm like, maybe is also part of why it's so not really doing well.
I mean, I guess I'm trying. Yeah.
Because like Looney Tunes, like I saw I Looney Tunes when I was a kid, but it wasn't like I was sitting down to like watch episodes of Looney Tunes or had like a lot of Looney Tunes merch and stuff.
Speak for yourself.
The only in that I feel like I had for Looney Tunes was Space Jam.
Okay, big one.
Well, yes, no, 100%. But Space Jam, I feel like was sort of like, that was like the play at that time of this, where it was like, oh, my parents liked Looney Tunes, so they're taking me to go see Space Jam, because it's like, oh, here's all of these cartoons that I really like, let me introduce them to you. And maybe the problem with Coyote versus Acme's marketing is that the Gen X people who would have be like, actually want to see the Looney Tunes, now their children are too grown up to go see this movie. Or, you know, they're like in college or whatever.
That's true. Yeah. Looney Tunes was created in the 30s. I grew up in a Looney Tunes.
Not Gen X, like the greatest generation. Like
there was a revival in the 70s.
Okay.
Because it ran originally from 1930 to 1969.
Okay.
There was a resurgence in the 70s.
Okay.
And I don't know why, but my family was a Looney Tunes household.
Well, yeah, but like, so, aren't like your sibling, like your older siblings, they have older. To be like cuspy Gen X.
Okay, when does Gen X start?
I'll tell you. Were they born in the 70s or were they all born in the 80s?
No, they're in the 80s. Come on.
Okay, so they're like old millennials, but I think because I think Gen X is like people who were born between like 1970 and 1985, maybe.
I don't know. I did have a Tweety Bird blanket. We went to Six Flags for one of my birthdays. My brother had a Tasmanian devil stuffy. And
like there was a kid who went to my school whose mom had a Tasmanian devil tattoo on her calf.
That's what she was known for.
Yes. Well, because it was like us as children were fascinated by it because if she wore shorts, it was like it was ripping through her leg. So like on the front side of her calf, there was like the Tasmanian sort of like ripping through. And then on the back was like its legs, you know, like.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, it must have just been on, the Cartoon Network in the 90s.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Anyways, my point is, I feel like it is deserving of the praise it's gotten as a movie to exist in today's world. I feel like it's sharp and quick and smart and leans into the silliness whenever it can. Do some of the details get a little dry, a little bogged down? Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. But I generally had a pleasant time.
Yes. No, I would agree. And I'm glad that it's out there. Like, I like the animation mixed with real life style. Like, I think that is fun. And I want that to, you know, there always to be a place for that.
Yeah. Like, everything in the first half with Wile E. Coyote and him trying to get this ball rolling. Where he'd like pull stuff out of his bag, or, you know, he was carrying a billboard around And all of that, like once that he was setting fire to the settlement agreement, the NDA, like there was so much funny stuff.
Yes.
Just like pulling all these pieces together.
Agreed.
And then, yeah, Project Sisyphus and the Bugs Bunny cameo and stuff was a little bit more of less laughs to be had.
Right. Yeah.
But generally, I'm happy to have seen this movie.
You know, and I will say it was better than The Dog Star. So
I'll say.
Put a bow on it. That was true for that.
And honestly, the like attention to detail is very funny. I love when a movie like leans into its own, you know, quirkiness. And so they had like a whole meep meep choir during some of the live orchestrations. And so those little details and the little like cameos and the little jokes about some of the Looney Tunes, they might not have had the same. But yeah, like there was an original issue with like they couldn't have Bugs Bunny in the first draft, and then they got him for the second draft. Like I don't know all the rules around.
Oh yeah, because Looney of the like rights and yeah. stuff.
Yeah, so this had a little bit less of the like big named guys, but the Tasmanian Devil pops up for a funny bit. Like you know, there was enough in there that it was. It was charming and self-aware. Mm-hmm. Meep, meep.
Did you buy that Will Forte went to Harvard in this movie?
Like it's hard? Yeah.
I'm like Harvard Law School. I was like this. I don't know if he's.
What about there, Lana Condor? Did you buy that?
Was she supposedly also went to Harvard?
Yeah.
I mean, she was a go-getter. I buy that.
Oh, okay. Well, Will Forte might have come from money or something.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I guess he was in Albuquerque. Yeah, I don't know. The rules were different for acceptance in the 70s.
Someone needs to do an article of like all of the like intern characters in movies, because I feel like we're collecting a lot of them, like the intern girl from Devil Wears Prada 2, you know, the plucky intern who's like too good at their job and then ends up like saving something. I feel like we've had a bunch of those.
I mean, throughout history, it's a common trope. Wait, but the Devil Wears Prada, wasn't she just an employee? Wasn't she just you starry-eyed walking into LGR and your first day? And
I guess that's true. Yeah, maybe she wasn't an intern. She was just an assistant.
Yeah.
I guess she was Anne Hathaway's assistant. Yeah, that's yeah. right. Because I'm like, she wasn't Meryl Streep's assistant.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I relate. I was an assistant once, not a legal assistant, but
yeah, you. Were
I mean,
an
we
assistant.
Both were.
And were we did save the day.
And we did.
I stopped probably multiple sexual harassment suits from happening.
Like you were trying to start multiple sexual.
Yes, that's true. I saved someone's face a couple of times, and stopped some things from spiraling into what could have been a great civil suit.
I did a lot of filing. I did a lot of. Oh, I took checks to the bank. I would go around and get boxes from different places.
We actually probably were the Will Forte character in our assistant roles, and our bosses were like, can you please try harder? And we were like, maybe after this YouTube video.
Well, speak for yourself. Speak for yourself. Don't let me end
I've
this.
Got some things to do. We're gonna break down the... What is it? The Myers-Briggs of various historical figures.
Yes.
I think that's more important than anything else happening.
You know what? I miss, like, on one hand, I don't miss going to the office every day because I haven't had to do that since I worked that job. So it's been six years since I've had to go in, like, you know, 5 days a week to the office. But there is something special about going into the office 5 days a week because you end up, like, doing... Like, there end up being sections where it's, like, nobody's doing work and everybody's doing something, like, really random. And I have a lot of fond memories of that. And I sort of feel bad for people who are never going to have those kind of weird interactions with their coworkers where you're, you know, like all going up to the roof to watch the lunar eclipse or whatever. Were you there for that? Or was that after you left?
That was far after.
Well, exciting news for next week's episode. Do you know what comes out this weekend? A sequel to one of my favorite plane movies ever.
I don't know.
Ball 2. Dead Point, where they're trapped on the side of a mountain.
Gorgeous. Love it. Wait, like, what is this weekend's number? Isn't Hope out or something?
Well, Hope is out next week. This weekend there's really not very much. It's Onslaught. It's the Tom and Jerry movie.
Speaking of.
It's Fall 2, Dead Point, a bunch of random small stuff. Yes. And then
you didn't watch Furious.
No.
The TV series. It's pretty good.
Furious, the TV series?
Starring Emmy Rossum.
I haven't even heard of this.
Well, you have heard of it because I brought it up on our last PCR, but in one ear and out the other.
Did you? What was it about?
It's about a detective chasing a woman serial killer targeting a sex trafficking ring.
Oh, yes. Yes, 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 yes. Okay, it's coming back to me now that you're giving me the description.
Anyways, that just finished. It was very good. But we can do Dead Point. Fall to Dead Point. Is it the same survivor? Does she get into this crappy situation again?
So I believe, because I just looked this up this morning, it is the sister of the girl who dies in the first one. Because remember how the plot of the first one was like, the main girl's like, oh, I've got to go commemorate my dead boyfriend. By climbing. Well, now I guess the sister's like, oh, I have to go commemorate my dead sister by climbing. Yeah. Oh, wait, it goes poorly again.
Yeah.
We're on like a daisy chain of people going to commemorate their dead relatives and then dying themselves.
Yeah, exactly. It's not worth it, guys. Send up your Instagram post and be done with it.
Although this time they're on the side of a mountain, and I'm like, wasn't that also the plot of the Charlize Theron movie? I didn't watch that, but...
No.
He was like trapped on the side of a mountain? No?
No. She was trapped in the Australian outback with the serial killer chasing her.
Okay. She was on the side of the mountain on the billboard.
Well, she does... The opening scene is her and her boyfriend on the side of a mountain, and then he falls and dies.
Oh, okay. So similar.
So I guess,
to fall, they took that. Fall 2, Dead Point.
Yeah, yeah. Exciting. Exciting to think about it. Maybe that, too, could be a Looney Tunes mashup.
The survivor from the first movie is in this one, but I think she's like the person on the ground who's like trying to save them. Right.
Let her catch a break. Like trauma galore. She already dug her hands through her friend's chest.
Shoved the shoe in the body.
Yeah.
And then dumped her off the side of the thing so that the cell phone would go through. Oh my God.
After finding out her friend was sleeping with her dead boyfriend.
And after a vulture was like attacking her leg. Remember that? Nasty. That movie was crazy.
Based on a true story, guys. This is real.
How did they get her down? Was it a helicopter? Is that how it ended up?
Yeah, because she drops her phone, the text finally sends.
Yes. Because the point was that nobody knew they were up there. Not that nobody could save them, but just like that nobody knew.
Okay. Correct.
Yeah. Right.
Because it was illegal.
Right. Yes. Because they weren't supposed to be up there. And then the ladder broke. And they didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll be back next week to discuss Fall 2 and 1. Oh my gosh. Was that Eric Bauza on the line with us doing?
Okay, you do a better impression.
Well, I'm not trying to do a better impression.
And that's all, folks.
Okay, and that's it. We're done. Bye.